Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, a fun show for me at least. Hopefully, I think it will be for you guys too. Jonathan Howard, bartender extraordinaire. He's based in Nashville. He appears weekly on my 10 Weekend Thoughts presented by Harry Alexander, which is on rebelgrove.com. If you're looking for a Mother's Day gift, a Father's Day gift, a Happy Friday gift, an April Fool's gift, a Christmas, Thanksgiving, July the 4th, Arbor Day, any gift, a subscription to rebelgrove.com is perfect. That's what you ought to do. We talked to Jonathan about, he just got back from Las Vegas. He was there for a national bartending competition. He finished third in the nation, which is remarkable. It was his first appearance in one of these particular competitions in Las Vegas. So we talk all about it. Really fascinating to me, and had some fun with it. So hopefully you will enjoy that. We'll get to that interview in just a moment. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's on Highway 6 West next to the Oxford Exxon. Right now at the Oxford Crystal, you can get 10 crystals and 10 wings for $10 all day. That's a pretty good deal. You can also get the bigger breakfast combo that now includes French toast sticks, fresh cracked eggs, bacon, biscuit, grits. That's a good way to start your day, a good way to middle of the day or to finish your day. The heads or tails combo, you can get the double dozen combo, 24 shrimp, medium fry, and a drink, or the surf and turf combo, which is 12 shrimp, two crystals, medium fry, and a drink. Or you can all day long mix five for $5, and now you can include the shrimp po' boy in that as well. All of that at Crystal, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You can get the 59-cent icy, 59-cent Crystal for happy hour at Crystal as well. Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. We've been telling you about this for a while, but give Corey Clark and the guys at Clark Ford a chance. All you have to do is do what customers from Cape Girardeau, Dallas, Jackson, Starkville, everywhere have done. And that is allow Corey Clark and the people at Clark Ford to save you the everyday hassle of the car buying experience. All you have to do is call the number 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. You tell them what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote. Then once you've done your deal, once you've negotiated your deal, at the very end say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden podcast. You can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast, either one, and you get $500 savings right there off your already negotiated deal at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. The podcast also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company. If you're in the market for a mattress or you just need some sheets, pillows, linens, whatever you might need in bedding, go to Snooze Mattress Company, 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford. It's gosnooze.com is the website. Jacob Williams and his team there, they do a fabulous job. They will get in touch with you, get you a great deal, get a quote, layaway programs, everything that you might need at Snooze. All the brand names you know and love, Tempur-Pedic, Serta, Jameson, it's all there at Snooze. Great service, delivery options, setup options, bed frames, everything you might need. They're at Snooze. All right, so without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Jonathan Howard, talk some bartending, some funny stories about Vegas. We finish up with a little college basketball talk, and I think you will enjoy it. Take a listen. All right, Jonathan, I've looked forward to this. First, welcome back to reality. You're no longer in Vegas. You're back in Nashville. You're back in at least some semblance of the real world.
Yep.
I'm sorry, and welcome back.
It's not all bad. Sleep is not a bad thing.
So that was your first trip to Vegas. I'm curious, what were your expectations of not we'll get to the competition in a minute, but your expectations of Vegas, and then What were your perceptions as you went along?
Well, I spent a lot of time as a lot of gentlemen who went to Oxford. I spent a lot of time in Tunica while I was actually in school. So, you know, the casino thing is a very, you know, typical thing. But I was not prepared for just the literal, like, just the energy. Like, that once you get off the plane, there's, like, you're buzzed. Your body's just at this consistent state of, like, just anxiety and anticipation and excitement. And I mean, I lived in New York for 15 years, and that's the city does the same thing. But it was like in Vegas, it was to the nth degree. Yeah, and you put that, you know, it's one of those things that I wasn't really as prepared for. Like, I wanted to, like, as soon as I got there, I checked in. I was like, you know, I'm gonna sit by the pool. The music is so loud, and there's so much just like frivolity happening. I was like, man, I just really wanted to lay down and, like, you know, have a pina colada or something, a mojito, actually, I was having at the pool when I wrote the post last week. And I was like, I just want to kind of, like, chill out. That's not possible. There's nowhere to do that in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that when I've been, you land, and it just has a different feel to it almost immediately, I guess, because the airport's crazy as hell. And mm-hmm. And you don't even really feel like you're in the same country anymore.
No. I mean, you get off the plane and there's lines of slot machines.
Yeah. That's weird.
And, like, one of the first things, a friend of mine who used to live in Vegas, he now lives in Nashville, but he said, has he got any advice? He goes, yeah, don't play the slot machines in the airport. They're really tight. I was like, okay.
And the other thing I remember about Vegas is it seemed like, and I don't have any problem with this. I mean, I'm not a smoker, but I don't have a problem with people who are. It is what it is. But I was always surprised at how many people actively smoked. Does that make sense? Because you're so used to...
No, totally.
You're so used to it kind of being phased out, it seems like. Mm-hmm. And not there, man. Different world.
Well, I mean, honestly, actually, I got relatively lucky. I didn't have a whole lot of smokers around me when I was at, if I spent some time at the tables or stuff like that. I don't know if it's that the people I was just sitting with, but it actually did not feel as smoke heavy as I expected it to be. Cause like I said, I'm used to playing at the Horseshoe in Tunica. And I mean, you could get lung cancer if he's playing there three nights a week. But you know, here it did not seem as bad. I don't know if that's just like a testament to people started dropping that and going to more vape and, you know, stuff like that, those available options. But it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it to be it, at the tables. Now, there are other sections of like the bars and stuff, the hotel bar and the bar at the casinos, where they were awful. But like at the tables, it wasn't that bad.
So you were there for what, 3-4 days?
Yeah, I got there on Wednesday at noon, and I got back about 1 a.m. last night. It's Sunday at noon, and then got back 1 a.m. last night.
Okay. All right, so when I was in Nashville, I guess you were in the preparations for this competition. The mm-hmm. let me see if I have it correct. Hold on. I wrote it down. That's not it, Neil, you big dummy. One of these days, though. Okay, so it's the Shake 'em Up Cocktail Competition. It's the U.S. qualifier for the IBA World Cocktail Championship.
Yes.
Which, on the surface, sounds like the movie Cocktail, where they go down and compete. But I have a feeling it was a little more sophisticated than that.
Well, the competition is very interesting in that it's for, there's two, the Shake It Up thing, there's the classic category, and then there's the flair category. So what you had was you had people like doing like these choreographed flair routines, throwing bottles everywhere and all this loud music. And you went from that to two classic cocktail competitors that are doing this very refined, sophisticated, specific, you know, elegant cocktail service. And it was so jarring to me, like, to think about from the crowd's perspective, because I was one of the first two. And then after I went, I got to watch. And I remember someone said, what's it like? I was like, well, it's like sending somebody to an AC/DC concert and immediately expecting them to watch the second act of a Shakespearean play. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's exactly, yeah. It was very jarring. And and strange in a way, because you had both of those things. Like you talk about the movie Cocktail. Yes, there are people that are throwing bottles in the air and, you know, flipping things. And then there was us. So it was a very interesting kind of thing. But the coolest thing was to see sort of the respect that each of us had for the other art form. Like all those guys were asking us spirits questions and cocktail questions and technique questions on making proper drinks. And, you know, in the waiting room or the green room, so to speak, we were like, you know, trying to use their bottles and flip them around, because we had about 3 hours of downtime from the start, from when we were called to like when we actually got to go, and, you know, kind of helped the nerds. We were all just throwing around bottles, and we were talking to them about techniques. It was a kind of really interesting duality of people that kind of do the same thing, but they're vastly different, you know?
So how many, this was invitation only, how many people from around the country were invited to compete?
10 bartenders and then 10 classic bartenders.
And you were in the classic?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. I figured as much. So you finished third. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's a subjective third too. We were doing. I was a little infuriated. Actually, so what happens is 10 people go, and then they pick the top three to come back and make a second drink. Now, when you're doing this thing, they actually have a judge, a technical judge, that is standing at your little it's like a portable bar, might be 4 feet by 2 feet, with like this under area where there's ice and stuff like that, where there's literally somebody standing a foot from you watching you. And each bar has its own technical judge. Now, after you've done, and it's a very specific way that you're supposed to do everything. You know, the wash line should be about a half an inch from the top, so as to not spill. The garnish has to be a certain way. You present everything a certain way. It's a very, very specific thing. And so somebody's watching you do this, like staring. You can look at them. You could probably touch them. You definitely touch them, you know. And so they do that, and then the drinks get whisked upstairs to a complete room where they don't get, the judges don't get anything but numbers, number 1, 2, and 3, and they judge. So they know, have no idea, A, what's in the drink, B, they don't know who made it, they just know how it looks, smells, and tastes. And then you get a score. And so of those, from the technical score and the flavor and cocktail score, the top three people went to the final round where we made a second drink.
Now what was, so let's paint a picture here. What was the drink that you made to get to the final three?
I was the only one that stirred a drink. Everyone did shaken drinks, like origami. Some of the stuff I saw was absolutely amazing. It was they were having like little flower cutouts that were connected by this other thing, which sat on this. It was art. It was very different than anything I'd ever seen, honestly. And so they're putting on the side. Everybody shook a drink. I stirred and did just kind of like what I do. I just, you know, I make drinks that I would serve at my bar that, you know, people would get. And so I did a drink. It was, you know, whiskey. Hillhaven Lodge whiskey. It's a newer whiskey by Diageo. It's a blend of a Tennessee whiskey, a bourbon, and a rye. And then we did, and then I had Liquor 43, which is it's a vanilla liqueur. A lot of, you know, good amount of like spice qualities to it, like spiced, like baking spices. Amontillado sherry, 2 dashes of absinthe and a dash of orange bitters, and I stirred it, and I garnished it with, took the entire peel of an orange, and I rolled it up and put 2 sage leaves behind it and put a pick through it so it looked like a little flower. And it was sort of an homage to my grandmother, so to speak. And so, I mean, I took that up. I ended up scoring the highest in the competition for the first round for flavor. And I think I got top 2 or 3 for technique, which is good. Second round, the finals was a different story.
Okay, so you obviously go into the finals in a pretty good spot there. You're first in one category, second in another. You've got to be thinking at that point, I've got a real chance to get to Copenhagen. So what is the, when you're in that final three, what happens there?
Well, it was a little strange, because after we, I honestly didn't know. I was told I did well. I didn't think, after seeing what everybody did and knowing that this is the first time I've done IBA rules. IBA rules are, you know, it's a very specific thing. It's the first time I've ever done it in my life.
That's International Bartenders Association? Gotcha.
Yes. Okay. And so I immediately thought myself at a disadvantage, because some of these guys have been doing IBA work for 6 years, 7 years, 5 years. Even hell, if you've been doing it longer than 3 freaking months, you've been doing it longer than I have. So I really didn't think very much. And when they were announcing the finalists, they announced a guy from Hawaii named Justin, who won this competition 2 years ago, who I knew was going to go through. And then they announced this younger guy from Minneapolis. And I was like, oh, cool. At that point, I was like, oh, well, it ain't me, because I was standing next to a guy named Igor from Chicago who won this thing last year, who's been doing IBA his whole life. And I was like, oh, okay. And then they said, from Nashville, Tennessee. And I just kind of looked over. I have another friend of mine who moved from Indiana to here, Ryan Puckett, who got invited. And so we just kind of looked at each other, and we were both like, wait, what? And then they announced my name. And the first thing that went through my head was, there was a million things that went through my head, because they said, all right, you guys got to go upstairs. You've got 15 minutes to prep all your garnishes and get your stuff together and get back downstairs. I'm like, whoa, okay. And so it was one of those things of just like, my mind goes a million miles a minute, because I honestly was not expecting to do that well. And admittedly, I probably drank half a bottle of sherry between making my first drink and when I had to go back and make my second drink, which is fine. It's low ABV. I did that for a reason. And then it was like I picked my second drink was supposed to have a dried apricot. And so I go to Whole Foods and I grab a bag of dried apricots. You know, you think, you know, the ones you see, the really orangey looking ones. Well, I opened the bag and they were not. They were brown. Like, but on purpose, the way they had dried them, they were brown, and they weren't the color I was looking for. And all of a sudden, I went into like panic mode. I went, oh no, my garnish is not going to work. I can't put something that looks like poop on the side of a glass.
Right. It's almost like when something happened on Iron Chef and they had something planned out and it fell apart and they went into scramble mode.
100%. Well, I ended up taking, I had candy ginger. The idea was I was going to take a rosemary stalk and take off the leaves and then stick the stem through the candy ginger and the dried apricot, because, you know, the drink had peach, which in that, you know, apricots in the peach family, and had a ginger liqueur, rum, applejack brandy, lemon, and a dash of Bonal, which is sort of a medicinal style aperitif spirit. And so I was like, oh, I can get all of those things kind of this one little compact thing. I had these small little paper like clothespins that I was going to attach it to the glass, so it'll be like just kind of floating there. It looked really cool when I did it at home, and it made very input. So all I got scrapped, and so I had to cut the ginger in a cube and try to get that onto the rim of a glass. And be noted that I can't use my hands; I have to use tongs for everything.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't touch anything with your hands. Like, zero. That is an automatic basic DQ. You don't touch anything with your hands. So I'm pretty good with my tongs. I use them at work. I don't like touching things with my hands as much as I can anyway. And so trying to figure the garnish out while prepping all my stuff. And I got something I was okay with. I wasn't happy with it. I was okay with it. And so at that point, I was already a little like, all right. Because the thing is here, the first person in first place goes to Copenhagen. The second place goes to the Pan American Cocktail Championships, which is in the Dominican Republic. That ain't so bad for second. And so I get downstairs, I go up the steps, and I said, which, because they've moved a new portable bar. So there was three of them, so we were all three going at once. And then I go, and I immediately look down, and the ice is that I'm supposed to use is like almost melted. I mean, it was about an inch of water in the bottom of the pan, and most of the ice is diluted. So anything when I put it in a glass, it's going to melt faster. When I pour something over, it's going to melt faster. When I shake it, it's going to melt faster. And so I immediately looked at every judge, organizers, and the people said, I need an ice change. And then, like, even the competitors were like, yo, let's wait. Let's let John get some ice, because they didn't want it to go down like that. But they started because they were running behind, and I just never got an ice change. So the drink was soupy. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, I couldn't get it cold enough without diluting it too much. I poured it over this ice. It just melted. The wash time was too high. And my judge told me my technical was perfect until he goes, until you started pouring it on that bad ice, you can tell that you kind of knew that it was over at that point, and you lost a couple points towards the end. Because my head was just, at that point, I knew. I mean, and it's sad. It was one of those things, like, you just kind of get the raw deal sometimes, and you just got to make the best of it. But, you know, to get third in the country with all that against me, I'll take it. It's the first time I've done anything like that. So, you know, maybe if I decide to do it next year, things will turn out a little different.
Yeah, but that had to be. I mean, yeah, yes, third in the country is awesome.
I was pissed.
Yeah, that is a phenomenal accomplishment. Yet in that moment, you had to be so angry.
Oh, it was. I snapped at the who I knew. It's someone I knew. I just looked at her. I was like, I didn't get my fucking ice change. And she went, oh. And the judge felt so bad for me. The technical judge. He was like, I just, you know, he even went up to the blind just because, just so you guys know, this person asked for an ice change. They would not. They didn't give him the ice change, which is why his drink looks this way, and it's probably diluted. If you could take that into consideration. So, I mean, I was just, and I, you know, I looked over both of what the guys did, and the guy who won had this really gorgeous drink with, you know, and the guy next to him, Justin from Hawaii, they have really, really beautiful drinks, and I'm sure they, you know, I'm gonna say that my drink probably tasted as on par for them or better. Their presentation was really gorgeous because, you know, again, they've both been doing this, and so I kind of was like, for me, it was more personal that I wanted to give the best possible product I could.
Which yeah, is, sure. You know, sure. You want to go down. You want to go down swinging. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. You know, it's like you at least want to get the ball in there. You don't want to take a sack on the last play of the game if you can win. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's one of those things. I was trying to give myself an opportunity.
You want to draw up your, I mean, March Madness reference here. You want to draw up your play. You want your marquee guy to take a shot. And you want him
100%.
You want him to get a clean look, and if he misses it, he misses it.
100%. But it wasn't that. It was, you know, the ball got inbounded and hit somebody in the head, went out of bounds. I mean, that's kind of what it was. And, and it was I was frustrated in the moment, and then I was downright pissed, and you know, my partners here and at Skulls, you know, owners, they were really mad for me because they were like, we, you know, who knew what would happen if I got a fair shake and all of that, and it was just a compounded thing, and now I kind of know going in a way to handle it to make sure things happen. I mean, I honestly should have just walked off stage because they wouldn't have started without me being there.
Okay, so next year when I come with you as your sort of moral support, that was my next question, because I'll be in Vegas next year when we do this. And,
okay, good. Coverage?
Yeah, I'll be providing coverage and moral support at the same time. I'll drink the rest of the bottle of sherry. But what will you do differently this time next year? What, I guess a couple of things. First, let's start with this. What did you, because you're around your peers there, obviously, you're around a lot of, mm-hmm. a lot of other incredibly talented artists, bartenders. Did you learn anything from some of those guys that you'll take
100%.
Back to your everyday practice, if you will?
Not every day, because this is not a kind of thing that you can do every day. The service style takes too long. You know, it's especially not American bars. You can maybe do it in some, you know, Japanese and European places where it's a little smaller, but you know the exact style of service I don't think you can replicate in a real bar scenario,
right?
But in terms of like this competition, if I come back and do it, there's a hundred things I could take. I mean, I saw people like the way they were putting together their garnishes and things. I was like, oh, okay, now I get it, because I'd never seen it. Now I have a better understanding of like what this competition is kind of looking for, and plus I just like, you know, now we'll just, you know, we're going to make, I'll make some things happen beforehand a little more. I'll take a little more time because this is a huge competition, but the biggest one in the world. I had to do these recipes, and then I had to start, literally I had to put this whole thing down for 10 days to get in my recipes for the largest and the granddaddy of them all, so to speak, Diageo World Class, which I've started working on. I read, you know, yesterday on the plane on the way home, I started really hitting that one hard because that is that's like, you win that, you're considered one of the best in the world. So,
now when is that?
I do the first leg of that in April. April 24th in New Orleans. I know they keep giving me these really bad places to go.
That sucks.
And if I'm top three in the regional, I go to San Diego again. Bummer. In June for the national final, If I win the national final, I then go to Mexico City for the global final. So that, I mean, that one's a journey, and it means you'd see my ass all over the country, you know, shucking Kettle One and Don Julio and Tangeray and Bullet and Johnny Walker.
So you're sort of like a professional boxer at this point. You do need a corner man.
I mean, if you want to be the corner man, you know, you can be Ricky. I don't mind Mickey.
Yeah, no, I could definitely be Mickey. I mean, I could give you, you know, some kick ass motivation when you needed it. I could give you a shoulder to cry on when things went bad. I mean, when you had to go see Adrian in the hospital, I'd sit with you.
That's good. Well, I appreciate that. It's very nice of you. It's very nice of you. But one of the main things too is learning is kind of seeing the difference of what everybody brings from across the country. So we had a guy from Denver, a guy from Hawaii, two people from Chicago, a guy from Indianapolis. Where are the other people from? A guy from Minneapolis. You know, two of us from Nashville. No New York people. Very strange. No people from New York. I was a little. I was like, oh, okay, that's different.
That is kind of surprising.
And no one from California. So that was. Those were both like. Oh, and two people from Detroit, which were both really good.
A lot of Midwest there. Chicago, yeah. Minneapolis, Indianapolis.
Detroit,
yeah. That is Midwest.
Yeah. It's kind of cool to see that kind of thing happening where it's not just, you know, San Francisco, Miami, New York. But kind of see just what they're doing, you know, and then on the flip side, when they talk about, you know, what they do, and how they do and stuff. And I go, wow. Cause most of them, this is just, you know, they're just a bartender at their bar. They might be making drinks, but you know, that's just what they do. So they have all this time. They're not doing like prepping business plans and, you know, working with contractors and, at this point planning a wedding and, you know, all the other kind of stuff. So to see like how the other half lives, so to speak.
Yeah.
Cause you know, they're just like, I get to go to work and then make drinks at work. And, my bar's too busy. I don't even have time to practice making drinks when I'm at work because I'm just serving people. So it did give me a little bit of pause to go, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about all the stuff I've got going on, and I still manage third, you know? And I didn't give it, like, my full shot.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable.
World class, I'm giving my full shot. And I one of the guys who's doing it in the West Coast region, he asked me, he goes, well, what are you doing for this one of you? Because you get world class, you have three challenges. You know, one is an aperitif and a digestif drink. So you have to make basically a drink to start a meal and basically drink to end a meal.
Is this the competition where you're working on the fog?
Yes.
Okay.
But then another one, you have to do these two variations on one classic cocktail, but you need to like enhance all the sensory elements you can. And then there's one called, you know, it's a speed round. So you're making like, and I know this is going to sound crazy to some of the people listening, but you know, it's four drinks in 6 minutes or less. And you think, I'm probably going to pick up 20. I think I've planned my round. I'm going to pick up 23 bottles is how many pours I've got to make for those four drinks.
You're not really making like a vodka tonic right there. It's a little, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. So you've got those. So you're talking about having to prep, what's it, 2, 4, 8, you know, you had to bring 8 drinks and on top of all the other extraneous things in this presentation. And, you know, that you're not just making drinks. I am literally talking, when I make a drink, I'm talking when, where, why, and how. If it's a classic cocktail, like I'm doing in my speed round, where was it created? Why do I make my version, or, you know, why I feel this version works this way with this with the gin that I'm given, you know, famous people that have used the drink in different applications and how mine's different. I mean, and it's all of this is happening while I'm making the drink. So it's not just the speed round specifically. I'm not just putting my head down and making drinks.
How do you prepare for that? I mean, do you have people that come talk to you while you practice?
I'm going to, the hard part I'm having is like, I did this competition 4 years ago, three years ago. And at that point I was living in New York and I had, you know, my bar that I was at, and we had a bar upstairs that wasn't open during the day. It's only open for, you know, 4 PM to about 12. And so I could go up there and put on headphones and just make drinks and practice here. I'll have that because, you know, both the hotel and Skulls are open at 11 a.m. So I'm honestly a little bit nervous about having a practice space for the speed round. The other two rounds I can do out of my apartment, and I've got lots of friends from here in Nashville, and then like my mentor who has been traveling Europe really heavily over the last like 6 months. You know, I'm gonna FaceTime him in and they present for him and talk to him and tell him why I'm doing everything, and then get feedback and probably do that with a lot of my bartending friends all over the country. Thank God for technology, so that I can get really good feedback from people who've done this thing before, judged it before, and then just kind of get comfortable with it. Every one of these things, I write a script. I don't talk off the cuff. I mean, I do research and I write, you know, a script. I write, these are the points I need to hit, and I hit them, and you know, I present in a way that's conversational, so it's not like I'm not being robotic about it, but, you know, I do a whole lot of research. I mean, there's a drink where I've got, I'm connecting it to the Treaty of Paris, and it's got an American ingredient, it's got a Caribbean ingredient, it's got a Italian ingredient, and a Spanish ingredient, and I've connected how each one of those ingredients, origin countries, helped the United States through the Revolutionary War.
That's incredible.
And it's called the Treaty of Paris, and the idea is like, hey, you take a boat down to the Caribbean, because rum was the largest spirit during the colonial era. You know, whiskey didn't come until much later, but rum was sort of, you know, the thing. So, you know, we grab some rum, we get on a boat, we go say hi to our friends in Spain who, you know, did X, Y, and Z, that's where the sherry comes from, head over to Italy. There's a gentleman named, I think it's Thomas Misa, it's on my notes, but he is actually one of the largest fundraisers for the Revolutionary Army during the war. So he raised a lot of the funds that helped get us through the war. So we go see him, you know what I mean, in Italy, and that's where the Italian ingredient comes in. And I have a chicory liqueur, and, you know, that's going to be on the boat because we threw all of our tea over, threw all of our tea in the bay, so it was really hard to get. And I'm going to talk about how that is like one of the first, you know, expressions of the unbridled American spirit, and then we get to the Treaty of Paris. So I'm going to talk about it sort of being a boat ride, and getting to Paris to meet with the King of England and sign the treaty.
Are you at liberty to talk about the fog that you're making?
Of course. So the drink, there's a one of them is a the classic cocktail challenge. So you've got it's the five senses, and the idea is you either have to enhance or diminish one of the senses to make the drink either better or worse, or, you know, stuff like that. So I'm using the sense of sight, and so, you know, one of the drinks, it's this old story, it's not a story, it's in my childhood. I would help my grandmother, she made me come help her in the garden, and then me and my brother would lay in the grass when we were done, and we would eat honeysuckle and look up at the sky. We're always curious about what that was like. So I'm doing that duality, that being the inspiration of like earth and sky. And so for the earth, I've made it's a garden martini. So what it's gin, a blanc vermouth, which is a little richer, it's in between sort of a sweet and a dry. And I'm doing four dashes of like a carrot eau de vie. Eau de vie is brandy. So it's a carrot brandy from Germany. That's just really, really clean, and it tastes of carrot. And then celery bitters and a ginger shrub. It's big in the colonial era. It was an accident, actually. It's when they were bringing fresh fruit over to the New World, it would spoil. And so to keep it from spoiling, they added vinegar and sugar. And what they found is it fermented during the journey and created this, like, the world's first drinking vinegars, fruit-based drinking vinegars. Then they added sugar, and that's what they would add to brandy or, you know, whatever alcoholic things they were getting their hands on to kind of make one of the first mixed drinks. So I've got a ginger one of those, you know, stir it, put it in a glass, and it comes inside of this, it's like a, I'm putting it into a like a soil box, and I'm making the judge actually reach into the soil and grab either, they get their choice of a radish, a whole radish, a whole baby thumbelina carrot, and then a whole, like, smaller red onion. So they have to actually put their hand in the dirt, which is one of the senses. And then they dunk it into a ice water bath to wash it. And then they take some tweezers, and they pull it out, and they put it into the drink. So they get to garnish their own thing. So you've got touch. Sight is seeing this thing in front of you. But then I'm spraying it with a, it's like an essence of earth. So I take Kettle One vodka and a high-grade non, you know, high-grade topsoil. And there's a slow-cooking process called sous vide. Sous vide is, you know, you cook in a water bath, in a seal bag, in a water bath for a long period of time.
Sure.
So what that's going to do is the nutrients and qualities of the earth, of the topsoil, is going to be infused into the vodka. And then I strain that through like a Brita filter, cheesecloth, or whatever. And I've got this liquid that smells like you've just reached your hand in the dirt. And I spread it on top of the drink because what's going to happen is you're just like going to reach down. You have to go through the earth to get to the vegetables. You're going to have to smell the earth to get down to the vegetables in the drink.
That's incredible. How long, I mean, give me, how long did, from concept in your mind to perfecting this, how long did it take?
Well, that one was actually a drink I put on a menu in New York that I got written up for in Bon Appetit magazine. And it was just something like I was making this drink, and then I recall a conversation I had with a chef friend of mine about, he goes, man, I wonder if I could like just get essence of earth and just like drop that on vegetables or something. And I went, and I remember that conversation, like, holy shit, I could use that application here. And I made the drink and put it on the menu, and then the whole, so the drink itself was made probably 3 years ago. But the whole rest of the application, I kind of fleshed out immediately when I read that challenge. I was like, this is easy. And then the second one, the other one, the sky part, is it's a vodka martini. It's actually, so it's going to be Kettle One, Driver Booth. I found this really awesome still champagne dessert wine. So it's a dessert wine from the area of Champagne. It's not effervescent. Fino sherry and champagne vinegar just to like, you know, brighten it up a bit. And then I'm going to do a technique called throwing. It's where you literally, you toss the drink through the air from one tin to the other, which actually aerates it because air is passing through it. And then I put that into a glass, a cocktail glass, and on top of it, I float a fog. And you make I'm making the fog with bergamot oil and grapefruit oil, chilled water, and then gin. And what that's going to do is, it sits right in some dry ice. You got to use the dry ice. And it, what it does is it sits right on top of the drink. It just floats there. So you've got this floating thing, and then the stem of the glass goes into this deep bowl. It's also got dry ice in the bottom of it, which I'm going to pour a liquid of. It's got essences of like oils that make it smell like cut grass and honeysuckle for that same experience of me and my brother laying in the grass. And so you're going to see this just cloud-like thing. And then you pick up the drink and you put it to drink it, and you get hit in the face with, and I'm going to ask them to close their eyes when they do it, but you get hit in the face with this fog, and you've already seen the fog, so it's going to feel like you're in a cloud. Well, because 80% of what you taste is what you smell, the gin fog is going to make the vodka martini taste like a gin martini.
So the gin fog is going to make the vodka taste like gin even though it's vodka?
Yes, because 80% of what you taste is what you smell.
I went to ULM. It's hard for me to kind of put all that in. It's hard for me to wrap my mind completely around.
Well, no. Well, I would say next, just if you're playing around, like if you've just got some free time or whatever, yeah. I would say just take you know, if you say make yourself a vodka martini, right?
Okay.
And take a you know, the peel of a lemon, slice off the side of it, and just like express it so the oils get on the top of it, right?
Right.
Hold your nose and drink the martini. You'll get no lemon. You'll get none of it. Open the nose, take it off, and then drink it, and let all the oils hit your nose, and then you'll taste lemon, which will unlock a lot of the flavors within the vodka itself.
That's fascinating. It really
just
is.
Just do an experiment that way, and that's kind of where a lot of this came from. This one sensory challenge is that what does it do to you if you can't see the cocktail? If you just got, you just have to experience how it feels, you know, how the glass feels, how the, you know, what sounds you're hearing, you know, all that kind of stuff. So and then, you know, you plug your nose. It's just the idea of thinking of a drink more than just how it tastes, because there's so many other senses that we can hit that are going to make it that much better of an experience. I've always been one on aromatics and smell and fragrance, because I, you know, and then touch has always been something I've kind of felt interesting about, but never really played with until, you know, till we get into this point now.
So I know you have so much going on in your business, in your life. You're getting ready to get married, all of that. How often, how much work, preparation work, practice work, refining work do you do between now and when you head to New Orleans?
Oh, I'll be doing, I mean, I, today I kind of slept in to catch up a little bit. I had some errands to run because I've been out of town. But come tomorrow morning, I'll probably, no matter what time I'm in bed, I'll probably be up by 9 at the latest. And I'll be at work with, probably do a lot of my research and stuff for the first hour and a half while I have my coffee. And then, right now I'm in the process of sort of gathering all the needed items I need, like all the soil boxes and all the, you know, all those kinds of oils and stuff. And I need this carbonating cocktail thing. I need a pot for one of these other drinks, like a heat. So I build a drink inside the, like, it's like one of those teapot things where you just, it makes water hot fast, but I'm going to use it for liquor. So that's the drink from the Treaty of Paris. Is actually a hot drink. So I have to find, you know, source that, see what I want it to look like, know that it's going to get to the right temperature. And so I'll be doing a lot of that stuff just to gather what I need over the next 4 days. And then come Monday, it will be, you know, continuing research in the morning, because the education and sort of academic part of this is huge. It's really, really big, big deal for them to know that you care enough, not to make a good drink, but to understand why you're making a good drink and where this drink came from. And then start doing practicals probably every day. I'll take some Mondays off, because that's the only day both me and the missus have off together. Just to give myself a break, but you know, I'm looking at it being just a little shy of, you know, three weeks away. And I want to have a, you know, really good showing, because I want to make it. The first time I did this comp, I didn't make it to the national final, and that's kind of been a small little goal, because I think if I get that far, the more challenges you give me, the more I have a chance to excel, because of the way I think of things. And, you know, honestly, I've got a little more age on me than most of the people that do these things. A lot of the people, they're 25 to 28. You know, I didn't really take this kind of stuff, the competition stuff, very seriously until about 2 years ago. And I'm doing it 100% to so people will have awareness when I open my businesses. I mean, it's, you know, I enjoy it, because I don't have, right now I'm working for some other people, and it, you know, I still need that day-to-day creative. And so while I'm talking about, like, paint colors and electrical plans and, you know,
yeah,
HVAC issues, while we're doing all of that stuff, I still get that creative outlet that I enjoy. Because if I'm not getting the kind of things I enjoy out of what I do, and I'm just not going to like what I do. And I'm in full dog now to do this, you know, period. So I want to make sure that I'm doing what I can do for my mental health about it as much as my physical.
All right, last couple of things. Vegas, known also for its five-star restaurants. Did you get a chance? I know you were slammed. You were really busy. Did you get a chance to go have a great meal?
We did. We ate at Herbs and Rye. I don't know if you've ever eaten at Herbs and Rye. It's great. It's a steakhouse. It's this really eclectic sort of menu, but man, it was good. It was really good. You know, just... It was all the competitors went. They actually took us there later that night after the competition. Like, we got done. We had enough time to go drop our stuff off at the hotel. If you want to change clothes, change clothes. I just took my bow tie off and wore my suit the rest of the day. And then we just went over there and had dinner and stuff, and we were done by like 11. So it was a good meal. It was a good meal. And other than that, it was Sunday night. We went to Herbs and Rye for this event called Barmania. It's a huge fundraiser for cancer research from St. Bartholomew's Hospital. And we raised double the amount we raised last year. But a certain liquor company was like, all right, so get on the buses and go to the after party. Okay. Well, the after party happened to be at the Spearmint Rhino, and just
yeah,
just Google that, guys. Just Google it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just Google it.
never been to the Spearmint Rhino, but I've heard stories.
Yeah, yeah. Just Google it.
Lived up to the reputation.
100%.
All right. Last thing: 10 of the best bartenders in the country get together in one place. And you go when the competition's over and it's time to blow a little steam. What was typically the drink of choice? Was it just you guys got some wine or what happened?
Well, they poured us wine at the after party. And then when we all actually ended up at a club, not the club guy, but that's where everybody was going. And honestly, like when you've got that, we people who've had just like so much on their palates and all these flavors. We just honestly got a bottle of vodka.
Cause you're just blowing off some steam at that point.
Oh yeah. We were doing tequila shots and drinking bottles of vodka. That's what we did. Just something simple and easy. We didn't really want any hassle. And so we just, you know, we did that. And you know, the text message thread from all the competitors, we always start one so we all know where everybody is. So, hey, guys, we're here. Or, oh, they're letting us in here. Oh, this guy said he would buy us, you know, they're buying the competitor drinks here so we can, you know, make the most of the experience. And the morning after was just like everyone's like getting up to take 10, 11 o'clock flights. I was the only smart one who took a 6 o'clock flight. But they were all just like, oh, I hate it. And then I did actually go to, I think I'm going back to restaurants. For lunch yesterday, I went to Lotus of Siam, which is one of the best Thai restaurants in America.
Lived up to billing?
Oh, my God, yes. So good.
What'd you have?
We had these golden grilled prawns where they took the prawn out of the shell, but the way they fried it, golden fried prawns, the shell, you ate the shell itself, so it was like a potato chip.
I'm one of the freaks that sometimes likes the shell.
No, I loved it. It was great. It was like this little potato chip, and then you had this beautiful, like, juicy prawn and this garlic butter sauce for it. And then we had pad thai, wontons. We had some pad siu. I mean, and it was just unreal. Everything we had was unreal. And it was just like a quick little lunch. They gave all the competitors like an American Express gift card, like $150 on it. And so yeah, we just went, you know, we all used it on food and drinks and. We were trying to use it on the casinos, but they would let the ATMs will take real credit cards. They won't take credit card gift cards. So we were all mad. We were all just going to go basically put our gift cards on black and pray for it.
Did you hit any sports books, put any money on anything?
I thought about it, man, but I just didn't want to, everything. There's no safe bets anymore. Yeah, I
Kansas
got really
basketball says hello. Yeah.
Exactly. I got really, really close though to putting a wager down on South Carolina to win the thing.
Would have worked out well, yeah.
To win the thing, like I was there over the, you know, they had already made it to the Final Four, but I mean, whatever the, I was thinking because they just defensively they play so well, and if Thornhill's going, man, they're good.
Yeah, I just, you know, I saw them. My mind's having a hard time wrapping itself around what I saw on March the 4th in Oxford compared to what I've seen over the 100%. Next 3 weeks. You know, I mean,
that's all that matters is the next 3 weeks.
It is.
I'll
give Frank Martin credit because I asked him after that Ole Miss game. I said, does this put any more pressure on you guys going into Nashville just to play well going into the tournament? And he was like, no, it's a totally different season.
Yeah, and he's right.
And he was right, you know, because they go to Nashville on that Friday, the day after I hung out with you, and Bama kind of popped them. And,
yeah.
You know, 5 days after Ole Miss had kind of popped them, and you thought, man, they've got first-round exodus written all over them, and here they are in Phoenix with 40 minutes to get to the national championship game.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, it also kind of says something for SEC basketball a little bit. I mean, we were the redheaded stepchild. We only got, what, 5 teams in, and all but 2 of them made the Elite Eight?
Yeah, everybody but Vanderbilt advanced, and Vanderbilt very nearly advanced. And then,
yeah.
And then, you know, 3 go to the Elite Eight, and one's in the Final Four. And, yeah, it speaks volumes for the league. The league was better than people think it is. It's one of those deals, and I'm literally convinced this is true. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree, and that's perfectly okay. You're free to. I think that over the course of the football season, which has gone from being September through December, football season has basically, college football season starts like now, because everyone starts doing spring stuff, and then the summer is spent hyping it, and
yep.
then the season rolls around, and it goes, because Alabama's been winning, it goes through January with SEC dominance as this theme, and Alabama's had this dynastic run over the last decade, and Auburn's gotten involved in it, and LSU's gotten involved in it. But you know what I'm saying? It's been such an SEC thing that I'm literally convinced that by the middle of January, the rest of the country has SEC fatigue every year. And so then the tournament is – Selection Sunday is just 8 weeks or so later – and
yeah.
the fatigue hasn't worn off, and those people are basketball people, and they're kind of basketball purists, and they don't like the idea of a, quote, football school and all that. And I think it has just led to the league being punished a little bit on Selection Sunday.
Yeah. Which is sad, because, I mean, I think that there are teams that from the SEC who would have actually had a much better showing than some of the, I mean, games that we saw. I mean, Baylor got just killed.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make an argument for, you know, for Ole Miss, for Tennessee, for even Alabama to a degree. But that being said, all of those coaches, or whether it's Andy Kennedy or Rick Barnes
they all said they didn't have the resumes.
Yeah, Avery Johnson would say the same thing. In the end, they just didn't win quite enough games, and that's it's kind of like, you know, you leaving Vegas. You leave there going, well, you know, I could have won it, and I could have done this differently. But it's the whole thing about what lessons will you take into the next competition. 100%. And for those coaches, it's what lessons can you take in the next year. And I do think that the league is set up next year to be a 6 or 7 bid league. I really do. Now you have to do it. You have to go win. When they get that Big 12 challenge, they've got to win those games, all that stuff like they did this year. But
right.
I think they're set up to get it done. And South Carolina's ascension to the Final Four has helped everybody. Everybody around the league, with the possible exception of Mike White right now, feels really good for Carolina.
who do you got winning the whole thing?
The big kid for North Carolina is a little banged up with his ankles. I kind of think Gonzaga wins it. I think they're the best team in the country. I think they've been the best team in the country. I'm looking for a Gonzaga-UNC final that'll be a classic, where I think – all of the country will get behind Gonzaga, because they will view Gonzaga as Cinderella, and Gonzaga is not Cinderella.
That's I was talking about that when we were watching the Elite Eight games. You know, some of the guests, when I had them at the hotel, and we have a really big a TV there, they were talking about it with me. I said, guys, it's scary. They said, well, like, Gonzaga's got one loss, and people haven't said a word about them. People are acting like they're just, like, lucky to be there. They've got one loss. They've lost one time. And no one's talking about them, and they're just beating the lights out of people, and they're still no one. I was like, okay, Gonzaga, UNC. I was like, okay, y'all just watch. They've been playing ball together for so long, and it is a team sport. And I wouldn't mind seeing them. I wouldn't mind seeing Gonzaga win. I think it'd be good.
No, I'm for them. I like Mark Few. I like the way they play. I think that league out there, the West Coast Conference, is better than people think it is, and all that stuff. So they'll be fun. But you know, I'd love if you told me I could script it. It would be South Carolina, North Carolina in the final, and the Gamecocks would win it. I think that would be awesome.
Right.
I'd be so happy for that school and those fans and Frank Martin and stuff. But it has the feel to me like, man, maybe they're taking this thing as far as you can take it.
Right. It'll be fun to watch, though, for sure.
Well, hey, man, I really appreciate the time. As always, it was great seeing you in Nashville, and great catching up today. And I'll be waiting for my material to go be your corner man when we go to New Orleans and San Diego. I like San Diego. I know my way around a little bit, and I can help, you know. I mean, I'm ready.
All right, I got
ready.
It. I'm in. Love it.
Okay, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care, brother.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Again, our thanks to Jonathan Howard for his time today. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. The Oxford Crystal Beer Garden podcast is also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. It's going to be a perfect weekend around here for grilling. It's going to cool off at night a little bit. And go to LB's and get everything you'll need to make your grilling experience even better. They've got all the best fresh cuts there at LB's. They've got the choice grade Hereford beef and grass-fed free-range beef from Joyce Farms. I'm a big fan of the bone-in ribeye, but if you like fillets, theirs are fantastic. They got strip, top sirloin, tri-tip, brisket if you want to put something on the grill and let it sit there all day. Pro tip, you can't leave your big green egg. You must sit outside and drink beer or bourbon as the day goes on, because you can't leave it. You have to tell everyone in your life to leave you the hell alone and let you focus on your grilling. So you could put a brisket on there for 13 hours. Just chill outside for 13 hours. Sounds like a good idea. They have poultry from Joyce Farms, pork as well, from Home Place Pastures in Como. Everything right there. The bacon-wrapped pork chops are fabulous. The sausage stuffed pork chops are as well. Check out their sausages. The chicken sausage, the chicken jalapeno sausage, I should say, is fantastic. It's my favorite. Chicken spinach feta is great as well. But they've got pork, boudin, spicy Italian, smoked sausage, and more. When you go in, go to the beer counter over on the left. Grab a six-pack that you six-pack of your choosing. Tell Greg Jones and the people there at checkout that you heard about the LB's on the Beer Garden podcast, and you will get that six-pack for $6 at LB's. The podcast is also brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. They do business for companies of all sizes, Fortune 500 companies to local startups. Really, the logic is simple, regardless of how big your company is. They find a way to captivate an audience and get that audience to do business with your business. It's very simple. They focus on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients. Sometimes that's a digital media and social media plan. Sometimes it's a television advertisement. Sometimes it's crafting a corporate communications plan. Sometimes it's just guiding a business through bad times. Whatever it is, SPM can find the right path forward for your business. They've mastered their craft in the political advertising world. They have decades of advertising experience, a unique perspective to advertising. And these guys really work hard. If you want to find out more, if your business needs help getting through bad times, needs help maximizing the good times, get in touch with Austin. It's Austin Barber. Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Hope you've enjoyed this week on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Neil Stratton of Inside the League, and then, of course, Jonathan Howard today. We'll be back next week. The NBA playoffs getting closer, NFL draft getting closer, Major League Baseball starts on Sunday night with the St. Louis Cardinals playing host to the world champion Chicago Cubs, so baseball in full swing when we visit next. Until then, have a great weekend, and take care.